So hello, Oliver Kim here. I am on page 38 and we're starting topic 3, genetics. Heading is chromosomes, top left box, prokaryote and eukaryote chromosomes. Well, first of all, prokaryotes and eukaryotes have DNA and their DNA is organized into chromosomes. Prokaryotes, these are those cells that do not have a nucleus, additionally might have so-called plasmids. Plasmids are not part of the chromosomes, but they are kind of small ring-shaped DNA molecules that also float around in the cytoplasm. But now let's directly compare eukaryote and prokaryote chromosomes. First of all, eukaryotic chromosomes are linear. They have open ends, while a prokaryotic chromosome is a circular piece of DNA. Number two, eukaryotic DNA is wrapped around proteins, and these are the so-called histone proteins, while prokaryotic chromosome is naked. They're not wrapped around proteins. And then, as I already mentioned, eukaryotes do not have plasmids, and prokaryotes might have plasmids. These are small ring-shaped DNA molecules. And in a eukaryote, they have two or more different chromosomes. So, for example, in human beings, we have 46 different chromosomes, and in prokaryotes, there's only one chromosome. Very briefly, I think the term chromosome has so far has been often used mostly for eukaryotes, but in molecular biology, the scientists also use bacterial DNA. They refer to that also as a chromosome, even though it looks very different. So now let's have a look, and I'm now going to show you how chromosomes look like under the microscope. So the first thing that we do is we look at the picture on the right side. The box is called chromatids. We're still on page 38. Chromatids, and there's a photograph. And chromatids and chromosomes, there is an overlapping definition and there can be some confusion sometime, okay? And the interesting thing here is that the guide, the IB biology syllabus, uses a different definition in the book here. So first of all, let's look at the way that the book over here describes this. Two sister chromatids, they are made of identical DNA because the DNA has been copied in interphase before cell division because every cell has to have its own DNA. That's why the two identical copies of the DNA, they are referred to as sister chromatids, and they are held together at the centromere, and together this is referred to as one chromosome. This is the definition in the text box on page 38. Which is labeled chromatids. The syllabus, however, mentions that this whole thing, when the two sister chromatids are held together, we should simply call them as two sister chromatids. And then after, later on in anaphase, and when the two sister chromatids separate, then you have two chromosomes. I don't know. I think it's a little confusing. But in any case, the point is it doesn't make a huge difference because in both cases, it's DNA wrapped around histone proteins. But just know one thing, that sister chromatids are made of identical DNA and they're held together at the centromere. And they are these little X-shaped structures, okay? And we're still going to talk about them a little bit more on page 39. So that is basically the eukaryotic chromosome, okay? So the chromatids can be found on the eukaryotic chromosome. Now we move over to the left, and there's a box called autoradiography and chromosomes. And now this is a photograph down here of a bacterial or a prokaryotic chromosome. And you can see that it looks very different. And as a matter of fact, you see a ring-shaped DNA, and on the top right part, you see this small, but that is a drawing of the larger one, okay? That the small ring-shaped structure on the top right, that is a drawing. And what the guy did is the following. He wanted to make bacterial DNA visible, and he used an indirect way. So first of all, he fed bacteria with radioactive thymine. That's the T, which is found only in DNA. RNA doesn't have the T. Why did he use T? Because he wanted to completely ignore RNA. If he would have fed the bacteria with radioactive A, G, or C, then he would have also made the RNA visible, and that's something he didn't want to do. Okay? So he fed the bacteria with radioactive T, and then they made radioactive DNA, because only the DNA contains the T. Then he got the DNA out of the bacterium, he extracted the DNA and put the DNA on a photographic film, and the places where the DNA, and he left it there for a couple of months, okay? And the radioactivity caused the film to turn black at the place where there was a radioactive T, so the radioactivity works a little bit like light, okay? So he put it into on a photographic film in darkness and left it there for a couple of months. And then everywhere where there was a radioactive tea, he basically saw a little dot on the photographic film. And so what he did next, that's how he got the pattern down here. And then he put the film under the microscope. He put the film under the microscope. And he looked at the places where the film turned black. And that's how he got the picture. Yeah. And in the drawing down here, what you see is that you see that there is a chromosome. But it seems to be kind of like there is a smaller loop, which is kind of branching off there. And the reason is because the DNA is copied there. The chromosome is just in the process of being copied. Okay. And that is the in the small letter. There's a in the top right. There's a very small letter called letter A, and you see that it's typed in there. Very small letter A in one of the loops, and then there's a letter B and also letter C, and these are the different parts of the chromosome. And A is basically a copy of C. Okay, you have to look very carefully because the A and the C are not very easily readable, but the A and the C they're copies of each other. Okay, so let's move on page 38 to the box on the right called the genome. And the whole genetic information of an organism is referred to as its genome. And the units are used called base pairs. Okay, AG is a base pair, TC, AT is a base pair, and GC is a base pair. Okay, I don't know what I just said. And what you see here is you see over here that different organisms have a different size, the genome size, in millions of base pairs, and I just see that there is a mistake in there, because the T2 phage, which has 0.18 million base pairs, the T2 phage is a virus. It's a bacterial virus, and a virus is not living. It's not an organism. Okay, so it's okay. I know I'm a little bit how shall I say, overly nitty-gritty here, okay? But the T2 phage is a virus, is strictly speaking, per definition, not an organism. That's not the point, really, okay? Let's move on to page 39. The title of this page is Karyograms, Homologous Chromosomes, is the box I'm now reading. What is a homologous chromosomes? Homologous chromosomes only refer to eukaryotes. And it is like this, that human beings have, with the exception of males, where we have one chromosome is not a pair, but human beings have two chromosomes of each kind. So I, for example, I have 2x chromosome number 1, 2x chromosome number 2, and so on. And these chromosomes are, the 2x the chromosome number 1, these are referred to as homologous chromosomes. And they should not be confused with the sister chromatids, because one of these homologous chromosomes has two sister chromatids, okay? And the other homologous chromosome also has two sister chromatids. Okay, what does it mean when they're homologous? When they're homologous, they have the same size, they have the centromere in the same position, and they carry the same genes on the same places. Loci, or the gene loci or loci, are the same. So this means if one chromosome number one contains a certain gene on a certain position, then the other homologous chromosome contains the same gene on the same position. So for example, hair color. No, this might be a bad example, but this, if there's a the gene for hair color is on the same position on all of the homologous chromosomes. So two terms that you have to know are haploid and diploid. That's the box on the right. Haploid are the gametes, the sex cells, which are the sperm and the egg cells. They're haploid. They only contain 23 chromosomes, so half the number. And the diploid are the somatic cells, or the body cells. Okay, they have a diploid nucleus. They're diploid, so that means they carry. So 46 is the diploid number. They carry both homologous partners. There is, however, one exception: the so-called the sex chromosomes in males. In males, we males have 2x chromosome number 1, 2x chromosome number 2, and so on, all the way up to 2x chromosome number 22. So that's 22 chromosomes times 2 is 44, plus X plus Y, which is not a pair. Okay, so we have males have 22 pairs plus X plus Y. So 22 pairs, that's 44, plus X plus Y makes 46 chromosomes. Females, they have XX. So the XX counts as one pair. So this means that females have 23 chromosome pairs. Okay, because 23 times 2 is 46, and XX counts as one pair. Okay. We move to the left, chromosome numbers. The thing is the following: the different organisms have, different eukaryotes have different numbers of chromosomes. And you have a whole bunch of examples over here. For example, humans have 46 chromosomes, chimpanzees 48, and so on. And you notice that the number of chromosomes is even, Why is that? Well, because it is the diploid number. Half of the chromosomes is from the father, half of them is from the mother. So generally, they are diploid. Okay. It does not automatically mean that if two organisms have the same diploid number that they are automatically related. Okay. It can. So that means if you find another plant, if you find a plant, for example, that has 46 chromosomes, it does not mean that the plant is related to a human being. Of course not. Even though the number of chromosomes is 46, okay? So page 39, bottom, karyotypes and karyograms. So what is the difference? A karyotype is the number and the type of chromosomes that an organism has, and a karyogram is a photograph of these chromosomes. And so what you can do is you can look under the microscope, you take a photograph of the chromosomes and you arrange them according to size and shape. And when I say shape, I mean the place of the centromere, because chromosomes are flexible and they can bend a little bit, okay? So that means they're not going to have exactly the same shape, okay? Because they're flexible. But when I say shape, I mean the position of the centromere is the same. And you can also see from the three karyograms over here on page 39 that the chromosomes are not just uniformly colored, but they have a banding pattern, okay? That's because they've been stained, they've been colored. And so this can also be used to arrange them. So let's have a look at the karyogram of example one, which is on normal male XY, and you see that the very last chromosome is X. It's an X and a Y chromosome, and it's not a pair because one is large, the other one, the X one is large, and the Y chromosome is small. Okay. So on example two, female with Down syndrome, you know it's a female because there is no Y chromosome present. You see there is, it's empty, and there are two times X chromosome is present. It's in the second row at the very end, in the second row. There is a two times X present, so it's a female. And look at chromosome number 21. It is present three times. So this is Down syndrome, because Down syndrome is trisomy 21. Trisomy 21 means that the chromosome number 21 is present three times. And example three, male with Klinefelter syndrome. And what you see over here is that this male over here has two X chromosomes and one Y chromosome. So it's an XXY. So this male has 47 chromosomes. Okay, it's a male because of the Y chromosome, which is present. So by simply looking at this here, just make sure, by looking at this, you can already make, can already deduce something, whether it's a male or female. And you can also deduce certain genetic issues, for example, just like Down syndrome. The question that you might now ask is, okay, where are the chromosomes, where are the sister chromatids? Let's have a look at the last one, example three, and let's just look at chromosome number one. And you see that chromosome number one is present two times. You see that it's a little bit thinner in the chromosome number one, is a little bit thinner in the middle, that's the centromere. And if you look at one of these structures, then you're not able to see the two sister chromatids because they're too tightly together. Okay, so what you see over here is two times number one is these are the two homologous chromosomes, but this does not mean that there's but the sister chromatids of each homologous partner are too close together, so you cannot see them. The microscope is not able to resolve them. Okay, so that is basically chromosome structure. You need to know this because now we continue on page 40 and we talk about meiosis. So definition of meiosis. Meiosis is the process of forming gametes, which are the sex cells, and the sex cells have half of the chromosome number. The question is now, which half does it have? If you take a sperm cell, does it now contain the DNA, the chromosomes of the father of the person or of the mother of the person? Answer, both. It's a mix, okay? But still not the full information, but because always the homologous chromosome is missing. The reason why we have to do that is because during fertilization, we're adding a second homologous chromosome from the egg cell, and we have to prevent the number of chromosomes increasing. So that means sperm and egg have to have half of the number because we're adding more DNA during the fertilization process. So let's have a look at the table on page 40, meiosis and sexual life cycles, the table on the right. It says here the column headings are number of cells formed. Before the start of meiosis, you have one cell, okay? And this one cell is a diploid cell. It has 2N number of chromosomes, so 2N refers to diploid, the full set, 46 chromosomes. And of course, two chromatids per chromosome. That is just like a normal body cell. And this, it's a stem cell which is able to make gametes. And then we have two divisions. In meiosis, we have two cell divisions. And at the end of the first division, we have two cells, of course, but each cell now only has one of the homologous chromosomes. But each homologous chromosome still contains two sister chromatids. Okay, so we're separating the two homologous chromosomes in the first division of meiosis. And in the second division of meiosis, each one of the two cells divides again. So we have then four cells. They now contain still the haploid number of chromosomes N, but now only one sister chromatid. And because we're separating the sister chromatids here in the second division of meiosis, for this reason, the second division of meiosis is also referred to, is very similar to a mitosis, a regular cell division, in which we are also separating this identical sister chromatids. Okay, so on page 40, I'm going to quickly step you through the stages over here. So, drawing in the stages of meiosis, prophase 1, what you see is that the homologous chromosomes, they pair up, and what they have done is, or they have indicated the homologous chromosomes using black and gray. And you can now see that they're next to each other, okay? And what happens then is in metaphase 1, is that chromosomes will align up at the equator of the cell, and in anaphase 1, the homologous chromosomes are separated, okay? And you can see that in anaphase 1, the two sister chromatids of one chromosome, the black one, are pulled to the top, and also the gray one containing two sister chromatids are pulled to the top. This does not happen in mitosis, in regular cell division, in eukaryotes, okay? Because in mitosis, we're directly separating the two sister chromatids. But here, the two sister chromatids stay together, and we're separating the homologous chromosomes. People often confuse a little bit the separation of homologous chromosomes with the identical sister chromatids, okay? In prophase 2, so that is all Roman numeral 1, because it's in the first division of meiosis. And in the second, then we after anaphase, we have a telophase and then a short interphase, no copying of DNA between the first and the second division of meiosis. And in prophase 2, we are now again starting, nucleus starts to disappear. Then in, we have metaphase 2, where the chromosomes line up in the equator of the cell again. And in anaphase 2, you now can see that the identical sister chromatids are separated. Okay? And then what we get at the end of telophase 2, we get four cells, but they now contain different chromosomes. Okay? And that is the point of sexual reproduction, is to make gametes that contain a different combination of DNA. Okay, so we are now on page 41, meiosis and genetic variation. So the point is the following. What is the point of meiosis and sexual reproduction? The point is that every generation is different from its previous generation, so that the species is able to adapt to a changing environment. So that is the real purpose why nature invented sexual reproduction and meiosis. And I'm going to now explain you a little bit what happens over here in the box on the right, on the left side, with the box with the title Meiosis and Genetic Variation. So, first of all, it says here random orientation of pairs of homologous chromosomes in metaphase 1. And I'm going to explain you now two possibilities of what can happen. The top cell in the box has now, if you look very carefully, two different homologous chromosomes. One of them carries the gene A, and the other one carries the gene B. And there are two different alleles, big A and little a, big B and little b. Okay, so that's the cell that we're starting off with. And now there are several possibilities, and this happens randomly, okay? With a 50% probability, what's going to happen is that the lowercase a and the lowercase b chromosomes are pulled into one cell, and the capital A, capital B are pulled into the other cell. So you see that each one of the two cells here in the first division of meiosis will contain A and B. But in this case, in the left situation, lowercase a and lowercase b are together in one cell, and uppercase a and uppercase b are in the other cell. That is one possibility. But how, maybe by chance, the chromosomes are oriented differently. And in this case, that's the other 50% probability, what we have is that capital B and lowercase a are in one cell, and lowercase b and capital A are in the other cell. So again, every cell has a and b, but they carry different alleles, and this happens completely randomly. Now imagine that this happens with 46 chromosomes, so you can imagine the variation is pretty large here. So it's practically impossible for two gametes to be exactly the same. Another way of increasing variation is by crossing over. Now, how does this work? That's on the bottom, on the left box, called crossing over during prophase 1. During crossing over, the two homologous chromosomes, they align with each other, and parts of their chromosomes are exchanged. So this adds another level of variation to the whole thing. In other words, ultimately in a gamete, in a sperm or egg cell, if you look then at this chromosome number one, because parts of the homologous chromosomes have been exchanged, this one chromosome number one will then contain both DNA from the person's father and mother. Okay, so what you have is that during meiosis, you are forming new combinations of alleles that have not been there before. Okay, so if they ask you about how can sexual reproduction increase genetic variation, and there are three ways. I mentioned only two, but there are three. The first one is the random orientation during during metaphase one in meiosis, and that basically the chromosomes move independently of each other, and therefore you have during the first division of meiosis you have a mix of father's and the mother's chromosome in a cell. The second thing is that you have crossing over, and the third thing is that during fertilization, you don't know which gametes are going to fertilize, and so here you also have a random possibility. And all of these three things, they contribute to genetic variation over sexual reproduction. Okay, so this is a fusion of gametes and variation. The top right box, the small one. This is you have a new combination of alleles in this case. Okay, and this also increases genetic variation. So next box, page 41, non-disjunction and Down syndrome. And the question is now, how can it be possible that there can be one chromosome too much? Like for example, chromosome number 21. And this can be because, there are two drawings over here, because in anaphase one, both homologous chromosomes are pulled over into one cell. So the homologous chromosomes do not separate in anaphase one. That could be one reason, okay? And then you see that in anaphase two, when you have now the second division of meiosis, then you can see now that this the left the top left the cell on the top left, it's not yet it's not yet a cell because it has not divided yet, because in anaphase two the drawing just shows the separation of the chromosomes. But the top left one over here, you will still contain now both sister chromatids, and therefore there's one chromosome too much. So there are two chromosomes, two sister chromatids there. The third one is supplied by the sperm cell, so you have three times chromosome number 21 present. Okay, so that is basically how it can happen. It's because of non-disjunction. This is when the set the both homologous chromosomes are pulled into one of the cells. So if you have three chromosomes instead of two, then this is referred to as trisomy, and trisomy 21 is one of the more common ones over here. Now, how can you test for that? There are two possibilities in the box. One is called amniocentesis. This is when you take a sample of the amniotic fluid, that's the fluid that surrounds the fetus, and this fluid contains cells of the fetus, and you can do a DNA analysis of that, and you can count the chromosomes, so you can do a karyogram. Okay? And now the other thing is that you can do chorionic villus sampling, and what you do is the following: you take some cells from the placenta, and the placenta contains cells of the fetus, and you can also analyze that. Okay? So that is these are the two possibilities, but in both cases you can analyze the DNA of the fetus. The chance of having a child with Down syndrome increases significantly with the age of the mother. And this is for whatever reason, because the egg cells during meiosis will, there is a higher chance of them having encountered a chromosomal non-disjunction. So this was now page 41, and now we move on to page 42, called Principles of Inheritance. So I'm going to explain now Mendelian inheritance. Mendel and quantitative methods, top left box. And what he did is the following. He studied inheritance on pea plants by doing statistical analysis. Okay, so he tried to do a little bit of math here and was able to uncover the patterns of inheritance. Okay, that is basically the point of the box over here. It is to outline the importance of quantitative methods. He did not just go there and say, "Ah, those two plants kind of look similar," or so. No, he actually started to count seeds, and he started to use statistical methods. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to explain the box, explaining the 3-to-1 ratio, an example of a monohybrid cross between pea plants. I think I'm going to explain this together, okay? So let's have a look at the diagram in the box, example of a monohybrid cross. So what Mendel did is the following. He had the parental genotype, it's a parental generation, he labeled it with P. And the smooth seed had capital S, and the wrinkled seed has lowercase s. Capital S means that it is homozygous. Homozygous means two times the same allele. Both of the parents, big S and little s, are homozygous because they carry two times the same allele. Both of these parent plants make now gametes, and the gametes now only contain one of these alleles, either big S or little s. And when they are fertilized, when they fuse together, we have the so-called the F1 generation. And in the F1 generation, we have the capital S, lowercase s. So this is a heterozygous seed. And when you grow a plant out of that seed, which happens to be smooth, because smooth is dominant, when we grow a plant out of that, then all of the offspring will carry the big S, lowercase s. Now, when they produce gametes, then we have now the possibility that there are two types of gametes, capital S or lowercase s, okay? And when we cross two heterozygous plants, we have the F2 generation. And here we get three times a plant with smooth seeds, which is dominant, and one time a plant with wrinkled seeds, which is lowercase s. And this gives you the so-called the 3-to-1 ratio. So how many crosses have we made? We crossed the P generation to get the F1 generation. We crossed two times of the F1 generation to get the F2 generation. And in the F2 generation, we have the so-called the 3-to-1 ratio. Okay, there are a couple of terms here that you should know. Homozygous is if two times the same allele is present. So either big S or little s. Heterozygous is when a plant has two times a different allele, big S, little s. The dominant one is the allele that is expressed when it is present once or twice. And the recessive one is expressed only when it is homozygous. Now, what about gametes? Can gametes be homozygous or heterozygous? The gametes, which only contain one allele? No. Homozygous and heterozygous does not refer to the gametes, but only the full the somatic cells, the organisms. Okay. So that is a quick run through. And my advice is that it's probably best if you actually do the crossing yourself. Okay. So we move on to page 43. Understanding of Mendel's inheritance is very useful for understanding inheritance of certain genetic diseases. Autosomal genetic disease means that the allele that carries a genetic disease is found on an autosome, and autosomes are the so-called the non-sex chromosomes. So on chromosomes number 1 to 22, these are the autosomes, and X and Y are the sex chromosomes. Okay. And there are two examples here on page 43, cystic fibrosis and Huntington's disease. Both of them follow the traditional Mendelian inheritance of a monohybrid inheritance. However, there's one difference here. In cystic fibrosis, the person is ill if he has two times a lowercase c. So basically, it is a recessive condition. Okay, and two times a lowercase c, two times a lowercase allele, will give the person cystic fibrosis. Huntington's disease, however, is a so-called dominant condition, and if the dominant allele is present, then the person already has the illness. Okay, so that is the inheritance pattern is exactly the same, but only what is important to understand here is under what conditions the person under what combinations of alleles the person will actually have the illness. Yeah, so what we have over here is this. On page 43 is capital C, that is a normal person, capital C, lowercase c, that is also a normal person, so the person does not carry, the cystic fibrosis allele, but himself is not ill, okay? And then a person has lowercase c, this person has cystic fibrosis. In the case of Huntington's disease, however, if the person has a capital H, capital D, then the person has a Huntington's disease, okay? Or I cannot believe this. This is really interesting because the notation is very bad here, okay? Just have a look here. It says here HD, okay, for Huntington's disease. Normally, when you you don't have a capital H, capital D, HD alone, that is the allele for Huntington's disease. It's very confusing. I think that's a really bad way of expressing it, okay? What I've always done is always use capital H. So if there's a capital H present, then the person has Huntington's disease. And if both capital H's are present, both Huntington's alleles, then the person has Huntington's disease, of course, if one of them is present also. But only in the case of a recessive condition, the person, only if both alleles are recessive present, then the person is normal. Okay, and the thing that I don't like here is that they use HD to indicate the allele for Huntington's disease, because you should not use two letters to indicate an allele. You always use only one letter, because what it can now be, now it can be confused that H is one allele and D is another allele. I don't know. I'm just seeing this mistake the first time. You never do that. Okay, that's not international norm. Okay. So that's on page 43. Just understand there are basically two different types of diseases, recessive ones and dominant ones. Page 43 on the bottom, pedigree charts for autosomal genes. The thing is the following. You can now look at in the pedigree charts whether a person is a male or female, or whether it's affected or not affected. Okay. So by simply looking at the pattern, you can already determine whether a certain condition is inherited dominant or recessively. For example, in the case of cystic fibrosis, you can see that there are far fewer affected people than in the case of Huntington's disease, where you have in every generation you have people with a Huntington's disease. While in cystic fibrosis, which is recessive inherited, in this case, the condition can actually skip generations and then reappear again. Okay, so that's a fundamental difference. Both of them, the cystic fibrosis one over here in the left diagram over here, there are two males which are affected. However, because it is an autosomal genetic condition or disease, females can also be affected. Okay, so we now basically flip the page and we are on page 44. Sex linkage defines sex linkage. Sex linkage occurs if a certain allele is found on a sex chromosome. Usually it is the X chromosome. There are two examples of this: hemophilia and color blindness. And both of these alleles are found on the X chromosome. And the issue is the following here. Males have a significantly higher chance of getting this, because the males are missing a second X chromosome, which possibly could mask or hide the defective recessive alleles. Okay, so this means that the males, because they have a Y chromosome, the Y chromosome is not able to compensate the mistake on the X chromosome. Okay, so what we have in this case is that in many cases 50% of the males have hemophilia, while none of the women have a hemophilia. There's one woman who's a carrier, so she carries the lowercase h, the hemophilia allele, but she herself is normal. So if the mother, and this is the cross which is explained over here, if the mother is heterozygous, X capital H, X lowercase h, this mother is a carrier. She carries the lowercase h allele for hemophilia, but does not have hemophilia. The father is totally normal, X capital H, Y. But if you make the cross, then you're going to see that there is one boy who has X lowercase h, Y, and this lowercase h is the defective gene, and therefore he is not able to make the so-called clotting factor, and therefore his blood will not clot, and he's a hemophiliac. Okay, while the other boy 50% of the boys are normal because they carry the capital H, the intact allele. Okay. On page 44 on the bottom, there is the box with the title Pedigree Charts for Sex-Linked Genes. And the left one is the hemophilia pedigree. And you can see that that it's sex-linked because only males are affected. And you can also see that the condition is in every generation. Now, what about color blindness pedigree? It says it's a hypothetical pedigree. In this case, also females are affected. And the thing is, what they want to show is that, yes, in sex linkage, also females can be affected. It's more, it's less likely. But in this, in the case of color blindness, this is not a lethal lethal condition. Therefore, if the mother is a carrier and the father is colorblind, then the child can also be, a female child can also be colorblind. So that was basically sex linkage. We move on and we now talk about codominance on page 45. Inheritance of blood groups is a classical example of codominance. And in this case, we have multiple alleles. We have two alleles for the dominant one. In this case, blood group A, the allele for blood group A and the allele for blood group B are both dominant. And if both of them are present, then the blood group is blood group AB. Now, we only have capital and lowercase letters, so two possibilities, but we have now two dominant alleles. So for this reason, we choose the letter I, the capital I, for being the dominant one. But now there are two versions of I, namely A and B. Okay, and the lowercase I, that is the recessive genotype. So what we have now is, for example, in this one, in the top, one, point one, it says codominance. Group A phenotype is crossed with group B phenotype, and in this case, the genotype for group A is capital IA, capital IA, and for group B, it's capital IB, capital IB. In this case, the gametes can only be IA and IB, and the F1 genotype thus therefore must be IAIB, and this is blood group AB. Theoretically, it is also possible for blood group person with blood group A to have IA little I. That is also possible, and blood group O would be little I, little I. So you can see that this is an example of codominance because a person with blood group AB will carry both dominant alleles, one for A and one for B. So the next one is talks about multiple alleles, and this one now refers to the issue that there are now three alleles present, IA, IB, and little I. And over here, it's simply a regular cross. In the first one, you have another person with a blood group A, in this case, IA little I, and another person with blood group B, IB little I. And in this case, we also have now the possibility for a person to have, a child to have blood group O. This is basically, the crossing is the same. The only thing that you have to know is that we are still using capital and lowercase letters. In this case, it would be I, but there are now two possibilities for I. Just to clarify this, a person who has blood group AB, of course, is heterozygous for this blood group because he has two different alleles, namely IA and IB, and that is heterozygous as well. So, the next thing is the following in page 45 on the bottom, predicted and actual outcomes of genetic crosses. And we talk about the so-called 3-to-1 ratio over here. And the question is now is how close does it have to be to the 3-to-1 ratio? And in order to illustrate this, I'm going to use another example, namely a coin flip. You know, when you flip a coin, you have got a 50% chance for heads and 50% chance for tails. Now, this does not mean that if I flip the coin two times, that one will be a head or one will be a tail. It could be both heads, both tails. The first one could be a head and the second one a tail, or the first one a tail and the second one a head. But it's also possible for both of them to be two heads or two tails. So the point of this box is to make it clear to you that the 3-to-1 ratio is only valid for very large numbers, and that it's possible that if you have the sample size is too slow, that you have deviations from this ratio. I mean, the chance of a couple having a boy or girl is, of course, 50%, but it does not mean if they're two boys, then one of them must be, if they're two children, one of them must be a boy and the other one must be a girl. It's possible for both of them to be boys and girls. Yeah? But still, on average, if the sample size is large, it's 50%. Okay? So this basically now completes the first part of genetics. It was, again, a quick run-through over here. This was mostly the classical genetics part. And now I'd like to move on to molecular genetics in the next audio file.